Coming up on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast, all things conference final, Dallas Stars and Edmonton Oilers, Florida Panthers and Carolina Hurricanes. Plus, we dive into the World Championships and a little bit of the coaching news going on around the National Hockey League. All of that and more coming up on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast.
NHL At The Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome to another episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast. As always, it's brought to you by Skip. Sean, skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, the last time we talked, there was one game played in each of these series, the Eastern Conference Final and the Western Conference Final. Florida had won 5-2. Dallas, monster comeback in game one, won 6-3. One series has not changed dramatically. We'll see if it will change dramatically. The other has. So let's start with one that's changed dramatically, Sean. The Edmonton Oilers and Dallas Stars. Edmonton has, except for, I think, the second period of game two, has pretty much dominated that series, except for the third period of game one and the second period of game two. But Stuart Skinner really has shown up in a big way. Anything about this, and I know you're heading out to cover that series, anything about this surprise you from what you've seen from these two teams so far through three games, with Edmonton up 2-1 going into a game in this Tuesday and game four is tonight in Edmonton?
No, God willing and Newark willing, I'm going to Dallas tomorrow.
Stop right there. I can't believe you're taking the risk. Like, you are just, you are either a glutton for punishment or you're just so tried and true in your ways that you're just, I am going to do it. I'm not. I'm avoiding Newark.
Got to work at some point.
I guess it's got to work. People fly out of there.
And maybe my plane will just disappear. Who knows?
It's possible it could. Hopefully it doesn't.
But no, nothing has surprised me about that series at all. Like, Edmonton's a completely different team, I think, than they were last year, and they made it to game seven of the cup final. They can play defense this year, and don't ask Connor McDavid about it because he'll take your head off.
Oh, yeah.
That's just a word of warning when you get to the final, Dan.
Yep, I know. I heard about it.
Playing defense is not a subject to be brought up lightly. But they do. They get contributions from all four lines. Look, you look at them and they remind me a lot of Florida, right? Florida's got somebody on each of their lines that's just dominated in these playoffs in their top three lines. You know, you look at game three and Hyman gets two goals late. He hasn't scored this whole playoffs. He led the playoffs in scoring last year. He had three goals going into that game, but he's doing other things. He's got over 100 hits. If I asked you who led the playoffs in hits, you would get down to about 18 people before you said Zach Hyman.
Yeah.
But that's what he's doing. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had three primary assists. He's a number two center now that just makes matchups a nightmare, especially when you don't have your number one center, which is the case for Dallas. We'll see for tonight. Rupe Hintz missed game three with some sort of foot injury after a rather nice greeting from Darnell Nurse when they exchanged.
That's one way to put it.
When they exchanged some pleasantries in front of the net. But this is who the Edmonton Oilers are. But I don't think we've seen the Dallas Stars yet. I think we've seen them in spurts. I would also argue, you know, you say it's only two periods. They dominated period two last game. Game three. Dominated.
Game three. That's the one I meant. Yes.
Dominated it. Yeah. They got it to 2-1. They were down 2-0. They got it to 2-1. And then Rantanen lets a clear in go through his legs along the boards. He wasn't strong enough on the boards. The puck squibs through as they tried to keep it in, and he was trying to get it out. McDavid picks it up, and he scores with 18 seconds left. Now you're walking into the locker room 3-1, and it's a completely different story than 2-1. And then the wheels fall off in the third period. But I think there's more for Dallas to give, and you know, you've seen it throughout these playoffs. They haven't rolled at all. You know, it's been back and forth for the most part, and it's almost like they need to be backed into a corner to respond.
So I love the point you make about the Florida Panthers, the Oilers being like the Florida Panthers, because it's it's amazing how it's gotten there, right? It really has. Think about where we were 3 games into the Stanley Cup final last year. Florida was outscoring Edmonton 11-4 in that series, and we're all thinking, this is over. This is done. And you started to see that again from Edmonton. The goaltending stepped up. Stuart Skinner has been terrific since the third period of game one. I mean, his second period of game three, I had it wrong. It was not second game two. It was game three. 20 saves. 20 saves in that period. He wins the game for them in that period, essentially, right? I know they win the game 6-1, but he wins the game for them in that period. Their depth has come through. Their lines are dangerous. It's very, very much like the Florida Panthers, and that's why we're trending towards a rematch, which I think will be an epic rematch, by the way, if we were to get it, because Edmonton's learned a lot. Florida's already had their lessons learned. So you come in almost on equal footing if we get there. Now, we're still a long ways from getting there. And I agree with you on Dallas that we haven't seen their best. And it's just sort of like Carolina. We hadn't seen their best, I mean, close to their best, before they played game four of the Eastern Conference Final last night here in where I am in Florida. They were closer to their best in that game, and it's a result in a 3-0 win. Dallas needs to do more. Dallas needs to do more at 5-on-5. Sean, they have 3 goals in this series at 5-on-5, and they've given up 9. Jake Oettinger is going to take some heat. It's not all on him, but he's got to be a little bit better, and we know that. But Dallas overall as a team has to be much better at producing 5-on-5. They were good 5-on-5, obviously, in the second period of Game 3, but you got to be able to capitalize on that. And for as good of a period, how demoralizing is that? For as good of a period as that is, for the Stars, you go into it down 2 goals, you come out of it down 2 goals. That's a killer. That's an absolute killer for them right there, and it could be the difference in it. I mean, this might be a hyperbole, but it could be the difference in the series.
Well, anything can be the difference in the series. Like, that's how tight it is, and it changes so fast. Like you talked about last time we were on, 6 days ago, we were talking about what was going to be a great Eastern Conference Final, and then 5 days later, it's 3-0, and I know you were planning to go home, even though you're going home anyways. But I think you were planning to go home
after 5
with the series over, right in the obit for the Carolina Hurricanes. Most people
would it have been wrong to think that?
No, but that's
absolutely not.
That's the way the playoffs are. And now all of a sudden, there's life. They're alive. I don't think they're winning 3 more against Florida, but at least they've put a seed of doubt in it, and people are throwing dirt on the Dallas Stars. It's 2-1. They win tonight, it's 2-2, and they have home ice advantage back, right? So, and if Oettinger takes heat, screw those people.
Yeah. Well,
this cat hasn't lost 2 games in the playoffs until yesterday in a row.
Yeah.
Till yesterday, or 2 days ago.
Oh, 2 days
ago. Whoever was calling the game, the Dallas game the other night, where they kept on saying yesterday, and it was 2 days ago.
Yeah.
He hasn't lost 2 games in a row in these playoffs until games 2 and 3 against maybe the deepest offensive team in the field. Not in the 4 left, in the field of 16. There's been other goalies that have been humbled by this Edmonton Oilers team.
Yes, 100%. I'll tell you what, at 3 games into this series, I didn't think that Stuart Skinner would be outplaying Jake Oettinger, or outperforming him, if you will. Maybe outplaying is too strong, because they're not playing against each other, so to speak, but maybe a little bit they are, but outperforming him. That being said, this is what we saw from Stuart Skinner last year in the playoffs. Struggles. It's like, it's maddening at the same time it's comforting. Because for me, if I'm an Oilers fan, player, coach, whatever, you might be going into it each game thinking, what Stuart Skinner are we getting tonight? Are we getting the good Stuart Skinner? Because the good Stuart Skinner is almost unbeatable in the playoffs. Or are we getting the tougher, the rougher, the Stuart Skinner, right? That Stuart Skinner, now he runs hot and cold, but when he runs hot, and he's running hot right now, Sean, that Stuart Skinner is gone. And it becomes the almost unbeatable Stuart Skinner. And that's what we've seen so far, you know, at least in the last two games, especially in the second period of game two. So he is a guy that is, you know, obviously the goalie is an X factor. I didn't think he'd be outperforming Jake Oettinger in this series, but I think that's also, you know, hindsight's 20/20, right? Like, we should be thinking more of Stuart Skinner, because when you see, you can tell early in a game, right? When he's on, oh boy, the Edmonton Oilers, they're not losing that game. And you can tell early in a game if he's on. And he was on, he has been on the last two games. And if that continues, forget about it. Dallas is done if that.
Well, there's two things here. One, I think Dallas, the comforting thought that they have is that there is another Stuart Skinner.
That's right. And that's why it's like maddening at the same time.
And he comes back
if you're an Oiler.
When you don't even realize it, right? It's one thing and boom, it's done. And he's just, he's lost and he needs a reset, right? And I'm not saying anything that he hasn't said. You know, he did a great interview the other day with Emily Kaplan when the game was on ESPN after the game, after a shutout. And you know, he's like, it takes a village. Like, I need a lot of help, you know? And when I was covering Edmonton against Vegas in the last round, he didn't start. It was Calvin Pickard. And every time somebody from Edmonton, a traveling media staff, asked Chris Knobloch about Pickard and how he's the number one now because he was playing so well. He won six games in a row. Chris couldn't finish a sentence without talking about Skinner and what a good soldier he was and how they're going to need him again and how he's able to reset. And when we need him, he's going to be strong. So this is something that's part of him, I think, now. I don't know if it'll ever go away. Look, you look at Bobrovsky, and what was the narrative on him forever?
Yeah, couldn't win.
And that is,
couldn't win the big
his
one.
His contract was an albatross.
Yeah. Yep.
And now, oh my God.
Now he's a Hall of Famer again.
Yeah, like, I'd take that guy in game seven any day of the week.
Yeah.
But like I said, for Dallas, I think you just keep on saying that Skinner's coming. We just got to get to the front of the net. We got to rattle his pots and pans. And if we get a cheap one, here comes the unraveling.
You got to bottle up what you did in that second period of game three, and you got to bring it for longer, and you've got to be able to convert. And, you know, to flip it to the East, that's like Carolina hadn't been able to convert when they hadn't had that type of stretch against Florida. But part of the problem they were having is they just couldn't convert. It's almost like Bobrovsky was in their head. That's not going to be the case in, you know, for the Dallas Stars. What I loved, I mean, you saw them start to roll it in that second period. You saw Duchesne start coming. You saw Sagan coming. You saw other guys. And they, listen, they may get Roope Hintz back in the lineup for game four. He is huge for that. He is vitally important for what they do. He's not Connor McDavid, number one center. He's not Alexander Barkov, number one center. But he's their number one center, and he's their number one center for a reason. And they, like, as good as they were in that stretch in the second period of game three, which I keep referencing, they really need this guy. I didn't like the slash. I really didn't like the slash that Nurse had had on him. But if he's able to come back and be the player he's capable of being, and it's an if, we know that, that changes the narrative a little bit for the Dallas Stars. But the other thing that changes the narrative for the Edmonton Oilers is, what if Matthias Ekholm comes back into this series? I know he hasn't played in a long time, but he's their Jacob Slavin, right? He's their guy, their best defensive defenseman, and who can do so many different things. And, you know, if he comes back, you know, and Hintz comes back, I mean, it kind of almost equals out. And we're kind of back to where we were after game three.
I worry more about Matthias Ekholm. Right. Even you can look at it like you can look at Miro Heiskanen. Right. And when he came back, it was 12 minutes in his first game. And then it went up a little bit because he felt better.
Yeah.
And then it went up a little bit. And then all of a sudden he's at 24 minutes again. So I don't think Ekholm's coming in and is going to be the number one shutdown defenseman. You know, I think he's going to have to be spotted and everything else. And Heiskanen, I mean, and Hintz comes back in the flow of things. He just missed one game. Is he compromised? Who knows? But I the one thing I will tell you, and I know part of it is because I'm removed, because this is my job and whatever, But the whole conversation around hints and the slash, and it happens all the time. It's so parochial, right? Like, he's faking. He's trying to get a five-minute major. Faking. Oh, well, now he stayed out the rest of the game. Like, he's still faking. Oh, now he missed the next game. Oh, well, it's still...
They're really milking it then.
It still wasn't that bad. It happens all the time. You know, what about our guy? Like, well, yeah, what about your guy? Like, if it was gross when it happened to your guy, it should be gross when it happens to the other guy. But that's... like, I understand that's part of fandom, but that part always does kind of humor me in a dark humor kind of way, because the blinders are so fixed because it's your team, right? Your team can do no wrong, so that's okay. But when it happens to your guy, it's not okay. And, you know, I just wish there wasn't that kind of conversation around plays like that.
That's fandom. That's what fans do, and that's their right, I guess. It's just you don't like to hear it from within the circles of the teams, the hockey, you know, the guys who know best, if you will. Because listen, that was a pretty vicious slash, right? That was a chop down, like he's chopping wood slash. It looked like it got him right on the ankle or the foot. I'm not 100% sure where it got him. At first I thought it got him higher. At first I thought I got him above the knee, like in between the pad there, but then you take a closer look and it's not there. Got him. If it got him on the lace, there's no padding there. If it got him on the ankle, there's no padding there, right? That's a tough. And you know, he goes down, he's in a lot of pain. He comes out, he doesn't play game three, and we're gonna still think he's faking it. Like, come on. Like, that's a pretty good sell job then there for the Dallas Stars for absolutely no reason whatsoever, right? So no. That's a little bit nuts, but they need him back in the lineup, and we'll see. He said he's hopeful to play game four. Again, game four is tonight. We're recording this. It is still Tuesday morning when we're recording this, just before noon. So there will be some information obviously coming out on that shortly. All right, so that's a 2-1 series. Sean, let's flip to the East now. There was no – you were right. I didn't think that the Carolina Hurricanes would have enough to play a winning hockey game in game four after just being run over and demoralized through three games, you know, but I didn't think that they were going to quit. I didn't think that they were just going to lay down. I just didn't think that it was going to be a game that, you know, they would be able to win, because had they gotten down in that game, it's mental, right? I mean, you're chasing again. And the fact that game four was able to stay 0-0 through 30 minutes, essentially, before Logan Stankoven scored, that was a win for the Carolina Hurricanes. They were comfortable in that type of game. And for the first time in this series, you kind of saw them be comfortable for an extended period of time. And their comfort... stability also allowed them to not be so prone to the giveaways, the turnovers, the bad things that were happening to them in the first three games of this series. So they finally played a little bit more Carolina Hurricanes hockey for 60 minutes, and they end up with a 3-0 win. And, you know, I think part of that, Sean, is the fact that the Panthers didn't really have a lot of energy in their game either. They don't have Reinhart in the lineup. They didn't have Mikkola in the lineup. They didn't have A.J. Greer. There's some guys that are banged up. They know they're up 3-0. And they didn't have much. But the Hurricanes took it when they didn't have much. So give them credit. Now I'm very curious to see, okay, has Florida really learned? Have they really learned from this? Because we saw what happened in the Stanley Cup final last year, right? Up 3-0, and then all of a sudden, 11 days later, you're playing a game seven.
Oh, I think they've learned, but sometimes it's not.
They better.
It's not. It's not in your control, right? Like, again, it's the one-sided narrative. My team stinks. Their team's great. Like, it can be both. Like, your team can be good. Like, that wasn't Florida's best game, I don't think. But it was a winning game, you know, and I thought that where it changed was, well, A, Anderson was better. You know, he gave them a chance. He made the saves that they needed. And B, they won the battle around each net that they had lost in a landslide through the first three games. It wasn't even close. Like, you could blame Freddie Anderson all you want, but he was under duress nonstop. right? There were guys in his face all the time. There were guys bumping him, knocking him back into his net, everything. He was upright that whole game. He was clean. He might have committed the only penalty. It went uncalled.
Yes, the trip.
And Bob wasn't. They were all over Bob last night. And look, Bobrovsky gives up one goal. If you're the Florida Panthers, you think you win that game. And I, by the way, how blessed are you that you get to listen to Paul Maurice and Rod Brind'Amour? Paul Maurice, after the game, saying that he didn't like the way Bobrovsky played the last two goals is priceless.
Yeah, they're empty net goals. But you know what, Sean? Sometimes you shotgun a beer, and sometimes you pray.
I do both.
Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you got to go back and listen to his quote, because he was asked, Paul Maurice was asked, how his team that seems so humble and together and willing and giving off the ice is so, let's say, annoying to the opponent.
Honey badgers.
On the ice. And he asked the question to the guy who asked the question. He goes, you ever shotgun a beer? Yeah. You ever go to church or something spiritual? Yeah. You ever shotgun a beer in church? No. You can separate the two. So, yeah, no, it's true. And listen, listening to those two has actually been great. And, you know, Rod Brind'Amour, you know what was interesting to me as we talk about this? There was questions about Rod Brind'Amour calling out his guys after game three. Basically, he said Jordan Staal and Jordan Martinuk were good and the four rookies were good and everybody else wasn't, right, after game three, which he's right. He was 100% right. When have we known Rod Brind'Amour, whether as a player and certainly as a coach, to hold back on honesty? Never. He's always been this way, right? So he comes out and he doesn't name names. He only specifically answered about a player when I asked him about Dmitry Orlov, who clearly had a very rough game three, right? And he said, yeah, that's one of them. He's got to be better. You know, we need all of these guys to be better. You can't have, you know, the rookies being your best players. You can't have Jordan Staal and Jordan Martinuk having your best chances, right? Those guys are checkers. They're different. You're going to get some, of course, but you need Aho. You need Svechnikov. You need Hall. You need Jarvis. You're right? So he didn't name all names. And then I heard this narrative like, well, how are they going to respond to Rod calling them out like that? If they know Rod, they're not surprised, right? Am I wrong on this? Like, this is who Rod Brind'Amour is.
No, and again, the whole narrative, right? That, oh, he can't win the big game. Oh, he's a coach that can get you to the playoffs, but he's going to get out coached in the playoffs. Like, you know what? Sometimes you run into a better team, and I don't care. Well, I don't care if you're Bill Belichick. I don't care if you're Jimmy Johnson. I don't care if you're Bill Parcells. I don't care if you're Scotty Bowman, Al Arbor. Sometimes you run into a better team.
You do. Now, the only counter to that, I'll say, and this has been a topic of conversation a little bit around this series, is when you hear teams that win and they go on and they win the Stanley Cup, or they're dominant teams in the regular season and they have a strong playoffs, whether they win the cup or not, you always hear, well, we can win in multiple ways, right? If it's a high-scoring game, hey, we'll find a way. If it's a low-scoring game, hey, you know, we'll find a way. If it's a tight checking game, we'll find a way. If it's a little bit more wide open, we'll find a way. The Hurricanes win in one way, Sean. And it's when they're on and they're playing that way, they win a lot, right? And they won that way. They won game four that way. But there isn't the one knock in my mind about this team is there's not another way. There isn't an adjustment to the style of play to cater to the game, the way it's being played, to win that way too. And that's their team. That's the way they're built and all that. But it's becomes a problem as you get later in a series or are you playing a better team, right? Where you've got to find ways to beat that team. Florida does a lot of what Carolina does. They do it a little bit differently, but they also sometimes do it a lot better, right? So you've got to find ways to counter that. And that's been the problem. When they've gone into the playoffs and they've played teams that are equal or better than them, the New Jersey Devils were not. The Washington Capitals were not. You saw Carolina being able to exert their game all the time and they could win one way. The Florida Panthers are, and they're struggling to win because they don't have yet a different way to try to win a game. And that is the one issue that I have there. And the other is, and Rod Brendamore has not been quiet about it, they don't have depth to make up for injuries yet, right? Alexander Nikishin has looked really good in the last two games that he's played, and he's going to be a really good player. But Brendamore brought it up. When you have defensemen, veteran defensemen like Jalen Chatfield and then Sean Walker go down, you don't want to have to, in the Eastern Conference Final, put in two rookies who have very, very limited experience. And that's a little bit of a miss. And they had, we talk about game breakers and game changers, and they had Mikko Rantanen. They didn't make it, they couldn't make it work because they couldn't adjust to his style of play to make it all kind of fit together. Logan Stankoven, they got in that trade, and he's been terrific, but they had that game breaker, that game changer, and they couldn't make it work. So there's a bunch there, I know, but that is, those are a few of the little details that are hurting the Hurricanes right now, I think.
But what does that have to do with Rod Brendamore?
Well, it's his style of play.
But
that's the way his
team is built. They can't do other things. Like, you can't be who you're not. The Carolina Hurricanes cannot run around and try and run the Florida Panthers through the boards. It's the quickest way to elimination humanly possible. They'll die on the way, and then they won't have enough players to finish.
Well, and they can't open it up either, because that won't work either. And we've seen, you know, it leads to turnovers. It leads to, you know, the pressure that the Florida Panthers put on you. They can't do that. So they've got to play their way, and that's got to get them there, and I know that. But when you get into a game, if you have to open it up a little bit, that's what they really, really struggle to do that.
But that's not coaching.
No, that's style of play. But I think part of it, Sean, is coaching in the sense of that's the team that Rod wants, right? And I hate to do this because it's like it feels like I'm ripping on him, and I don't want to because I think he's a hell of a coach. I really do. And you don't get to the playoffs every year and win rounds in the playoff every year without being an absolutely terrific coach, because nobody does that. He's the only one, right, that's done that since 2019. So you got to give him a heck of a lot of credit. And maybe it's not coaching. Maybe it's the way the team is built, and maybe there's a little bit of a disconnect in how the team is built versus what he believes in too.
You know who they used to say this about? And it almost drove him out of hockey? Paul Maurice.
It's true. You're right.
He left the Winnipeg Jets.
Couldn't get more out of him.
Because there was nothing left. And he was burnt out, and that was the end. He couldn't make that team into what he envisioned. And then he went to Florida, and they gave him new pieces. And all of a sudden, he made the best goddamn cake you've ever seen. And they shotgun beers, not in church, but down the beach. And at the elbow room.
But here's the thing, what they have. They've got guys in Barkov and Bennett, Verhaeghe, Tkachuk, Rodriguez, Marchand now, Lindell, Lustarainen, who all pull the same way, but all can play a little bit differently. And their differences complement each other.
But that
the Hurricanes have guys who all pull the same way and all play the same way.
But that's, Paul had nothing to do with that.
No, that's
ingredients,
yeah,
that he
right.
And makes the meal.
Yeah, you're
doesn't
right.
Buy the
you're
groceries.
100% right. Yeah, you're right. And
neither
that's
does,
probably the same
neither
case.
Neither does
with Rod.
Rod. Like, this whole thing about Rod Brendamore not being a playoff coach and not being a guy who can get you there and then can't win. First of all, there's only one team that wins. You look at some of the best coaches in the league, and their playoff records are 500. This is a hard thing to do. It's a really hard thing to do. The best team in the league almost never makes it to the third round of the playoffs. Why? Because it's a hard thing to do. Here's a guy who does it on a regular basis. He can coach my team any day of the week and twice on Sunday while we're shotgunning beers at church.
And you're right. Hey, listen, I said it before, right? Nobody does what he's done, right? Nobody's getting to the playoffs 7 years in a row and winning a round every year, getting to the conference final three times. Like, this doesn't happen very often. You know, I know what Paul Maurice is doing now is incredible with the Florida Panthers, and what John Cooper did with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Mike Sullivan, you know, for a couple of years there did it with Pittsburgh, but it just doesn't happen. The extended time, they haven't won the Stanley Cup. They finally won a game in the Eastern Conference Final, but the extended time that they've gotten to the playoffs and won games in the playoffs and been able to play their game in the playoffs is remarkable, and it makes him a great coach. And yeah, you're right. He's not the one that's going out and acquiring all the pieces. He's got to make it work. It didn't work with Rantanen, and that's okay. You know, that's – you'd rather it did, but I understand. You give – you know, almost a – forget about it at this point because it's a lost cause at this point. They just – they need – they're here again, and if they – maybe they come back. Maybe they pull this history off, but it's the same narrative with them. They still need – the guy that can change a game with one play. They think it's going to be Svechnikov. They've thought it's going to be Svechnikov for a long time. He can, Sean, but he just doesn't do it on a consistent basis. And if they lose this series again, that's going to, again, be the thing that comes at them. And maybe that's not Rod. That's on everybody, right? That's not on Rod. It's on everybody. And here's the thing with Carolina, Sean. I think they're going to have around $30 million in cap space if Orlov leaves and Burns leaves and a few others change hands, right? They can go out and get that guy. They can. And if I'm a player and I talk to other players around the league, the one thing you constantly hear from other players around the league who've played in Carolina is they love playing for Rod Brindamore. So maybe they can go get that guy. And they tried with Rantanen and it didn't work. Maybe they'll try again. Who knows?
Rantanen's not the guy, by the way. The guy is a Matthew Tkachuk. That's what changed everything for Florida. It wasn't the goals. Yes. They had all the other pieces. It was that screw you.
It's the guy who goes after Aho to get because you hit Reinhardt. And Carolina doesn't have that guy.
Yeah.
Right?
No, that's
Carolina doesn't.
That's
have that
what
guy.
They need. But while we're speaking about coaches, I'm going to change gears a little bit. How about that Ryan Warsawski? The young man.
Nice little segue for you.
The young
nice
man.
Little segue for you.
Goes to San Jose. That's a tough one. Knew it was going to be tough. Maybe did a little better than everybody thought. Helped that team develop late in the year. Then he goes to Sweden and Denmark and takes a very talented USA team to the Worlds.
Very young, and talented, and USA team,
and wins the World Championships for the first time in
92.
I was going to say 93. 92 years.
92 years.
They did win the Olympics, and the Worlds were considered the same thing. So they won in 60 when they won in Squaw Valley. But for a world standalone, 92 years. And he did it against some loaded competition. They beat that Sweden team in the semifinals. That's close to the Olympic team for Sweden. Canada had Crosby, MacKinnon, Fleury, and assorted other greats. And the team that survived was the Ryan Warsawski-led Team USA. And the final was ridiculous. It was against the Swiss, who had been to the final four times in the last 7 years, I want to say, maybe last nine. Lost every time. Maybe they're coached by Rod Brindamore. They lose 1-0.
Wow.
Well, that's the narrative, right?
They lose
1-0 in overtime in the final. Tage Thompson with a shot for the ages.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much puts himself in the Olympic conversation right there. He was maybe one of the last guys cut from Four Nations. You have to have that conversation again. Jeremy Swayman, fantastic in the nets. He said afterwards to our guy, Aaron Vickers, like, this is what rejuvenated me. I'm going to go back to Boston, and I know who I am, and I know who I can be, and I know what this feels like. I can't say enough about this tournament and what it did for me personally. But Warsawski led the whole thing. Fantastic job by him. Congratulations to all of them. It was a great tournament.
It was a great tournament. It was a great finish. I feel for the Swiss. Oh, because you listen, we're Americans. We're USA hockey guys because who we are, it's what we grew up with, right? But you know it means so much more in Switzerland than it does here in the United States. It means more to USA. I'm not to USA hockey, right? And not to that. But they would have gone berserk in Switzerland if they won. So I feel for them. Not too much, though, because I like to see the U.S. win, right? So you feel just a little bit. I'm happy for Tage Thompson. I mean, the guy has had just a rough go of it in Buffalo. One of the last cuts for the Four Nations. Goes to the Four Nations. And don't forget, he was there in Boston. He was called in, right? But he doesn't get to dress. He doesn't get to play. 100% this puts him on the Olympic radar, if he wasn't already. But your point on Ryan Warsawski is a terrific point, both for USA Hockey, but for the San Jose Sharks. Because to me, it's validation for the Sharks that they've got the right guy, right? That this guy is the coach for us to not just guide us. Because how many times have we seen it, right? Well, he'll take us through the rebuild, and then we'll get the real coach that'll take us over the hump, right? This guy's the guy who's going to do it for San Jose. He's a very good coach. He's a young coach, a good coach. He's got a pulse. You look at the way the Sharks played, they never wilted. They just didn't have enough talent, right? And then they got rid of more talent before the deadline. A couple of those guys, by the way, are playing in the Western Conference Final right now, right? And Granlund and CeCe, okay? So this guy's a really good coach, and they hired the right guy. And that's got to be validation for them. It's got to, for guys like Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith and a few others there in San Jose, show, okay, all right, it also brings another level of respect from the players there in San Jose to their coach, which they shouldn't need because he is a good coach, but now he's got something there on his resume that matters. This tournament is not the Olympics, but it can't ever be with what's going on since the Stanley Cup playoffs are going on, but it's not far off from the other countries. And he went out and did it. And it's a terrific job. The Johnny Gaudreau story and the motivation there with Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau is just it just continues on, and it will continue on. But it matters. It should matter to American hockey fans, but it really does matter to guys who played in it. And I think specifically to the San Jose Sharks.
Well, you know what Ryan Warsawski is?
Isn't he a Rhode Islander?
No.
No? No. I was wrong about that.
He's Jared Bednar.
Taking the same
developmental path.
Yep. Yeah.
He's taken over.
I see that.
Jared took over a Colorado team that was on its way up but wasn't there yet. And he's been really good, and he's grown with them. And I think that's what Ryan's going to be. But, yeah, the Gaudreau moment was unbelievable when Werenski, who was unbelievable in that tournament, he played 28 minutes a game. I don't even know what he played in the final. It seemed like he was out there every other shift on the big ice. He leaves the celebration to go in the locker room and get the Gaudreau jersey. If you aren't tearing up at that point, I need you to go see somebody. Because it was heartrending. And speaking of which, big Gaudreau event this weekend in Sewell, New Jersey. 5K and assorted other events to raise money, all in Johnny and Matthew's name. So if you're in the area, check it out. Go online. If you can donate, that's great. But while we talk about all these coaches and before we get out of here, there's still a couple openings. And there's a new coach, a new old coach, being introduced today in Chicago in Jeff Blashill. Tracy Myers, our correspondent, home from the playoffs for a few days, will be there to document that, but still openings in Pittsburgh.
Seattle, too.
Seattle.
And we don't know about Boston.
So maybe we need to go through the coaches' room roster.
They just got to come talk to me, Sean. We've gone over this. Come talk to me, do coach's room, you'll get a job. That's how it works. The Jeff Blashill hire in Chicago, it's not overly inspiring, you know what I mean? And that's not a knock on Blashill. But this is a second chance for Jeff Blashill. He had the first one in Detroit, and then he went to Tampa, and he coached under John Cooper, and he was there, and he was involved in their coaching staff. Had some success, got teams to, helped get teams to the playoffs. there, you know, we know where the Blackhawks are right now, and it, I'm curious to hear Blashill and how he approaches this, because you can't approach this job and say the things of like, oh, we're going to, things are going to change. We're going to, you know, ball, you know, going to go nuts here. We're going to be great. You're going to figure it out right away. It's, you got to have patience, right? You got to have some time. You got to have some patience. You got to get a working relationship with Connor Bedard. You've got a working, you got to get a working relationship with Kyle Davidson. Like, there's got to be some time here for them. So I'm curious to see what he has to say, but he'll be, you'd think that he would be better, not that he was bad, but you think he would be better in his second go-round as a National Hockey League coach, where he goes to now a market, and it's his second original six market. The pressure is slightly off now. Like, expectations are low, and you have an opportunity to build them up. He kind of had that in Detroit, too, and it didn't quite work. But they also, they never, you know, put the right pieces in place, to be honest with you. And now the Blackhawks have that opportunity.
So you want Jeff Blashill to be patient?
Well, I think he has to be.
He was in Detroit. What'd that get him? Maybe he should ask. Maybe he should ask David Quinn about being patient.
But what else can he do there? You can't come in and say we're going to make the playoffs next year. It's got to be, of course, an internal, you know, goal, but. Like, they're far away from it, man. They're really, really far. Look at these teams playing now. They're not even, the Blackhawks are nowhere in the vicinity of these teams playing right now. Heck, the Washington Capitals are not in the vicinity of this team's playing right now. They just got knocked out in five games by the Carolina Hurricanes, who are now facing a five-game elimination against the Florida Panthers. Like,
should he go ask Cronin and Anaheim about being patient?
Listen, your points make sense. I understand it, but I don't know what else he could do. I don't know what other mindset he can have. That's because you'll lose your mind if you're going for it right now and this team's not ready for it.
He's in the same position that Dan Quinn was in.
David Quinn.
David Quinn.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn is the ex-defenseman.
Pro
golfer, quasi.
But the difference is that Blashill has had NHL head coaching experience before. David Quinn didn't. That's a difference.
No,
Cronin didn't.
No,
Blashill does.
Quinn did.
Not NHL head coaching.
Yeah, he coached the Rangers.
Oh, I thought you meant when he went to the Rangers.
No, and then he got a job with the Sharks.
Oh yeah.
And everybody said patience, patience, patience.
But he didn't have the number one pick.
And now he's an assistant coach, and there's nothing wrong with that. But his ticket might be punched. There may be no punches left on his ticket.
I understand, but it was also a different scenario.
And you're not going to go down fighting. You're just going to play the game and say, "Oh yeah, I'll be patient. I'll take my licks, and I'll get the call from the next coach, like Cronin got, and say thanks for setting this up for me. Now we're going to go win."
Well, the difference is, you know, he didn't have in San Jose the generational player yet. Blashill does, if that's what Connor Bedard is supposed to be. So we'll see. We'll see. I understand everything you're saying. I just don't know how he goes into this, you know, without understanding that it's going to require work. It's going to require some patience. It's going to require time. And you hope for his sake that they build enough and they show enough progress over, you know, day after day, week after week, month after month, season after season, that he's given the opportunity to see it through. That's got to be what, you know, that everyone there is a little bit patient with him too.
Yeah, that's the hope. But I don't know if you're in that position that you can do the same thing that you did before, because you know you're kind of in trouble.
Well, we'll see, because like you said, Seattle also has opening. Pittsburgh has an opening. Boston, we're not 100% sure of. Joe Sacco remains the interim coach there. We know that Don Sweeney got his extension. The U.S. is world champions, first time in 92 years. We got the Panthers up 3-1, a chance to close that series out in Raleigh on Wednesday. You got the Edmonton Oilers up 2-1. Maybe Dallas can make this a 2-2 series Tuesday night. It is May 27th, Sean, and there's still a heck of a lot going on and so much more to go through in the next month plus.
There's almost a month of hockey left, dude.
Almost. A little less. Yeah. You and I will be in L.A. for the draft a month from now.
Yep. And but then, if it goes seven games in the Stanley Cup final, we're leaving right from Edmonton.
I know. I know.
So which, when you think about it, it's a long time before the season gets over, and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And I'm listen, I'm selfishly kind of hoping that Dallas does make this a series. And I'm selfishly a little bit hoping that Carolina makes this a series because, you know what? But let's see some action here in these conference finals before we get to the Stanley Cup final. But we will see. This was a lot of fun, Sean. You're leaving from Newark, man. Good luck.
I'm going to shotgun some beers in the terminal.
And then go pray, please. And then we'll all pray for you. How about that? Anyway, this was a lot of fun. As always, the podcast brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part. Get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.